Every vote counts, but will it be counted? That's the question in Pennsylvania.
That's an excellent question for Pennsylvania. That's a good question for every state in the union, now that I think about it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Hey, here I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News. Yeah, we'll be talking about you, Keystone State. Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN. Palinville, New York's WLPP. Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV. Out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN. Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ. In Seattle on KODX. Richmond, Virginia's WRWK. Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR. Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR. And Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets. On the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thanks for joining us. Glad to have you here with us today. Coming up, we will be, yes, heading down to what is widely regarded as the this year's tipping point state in the 2024 election, the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, where you can expect to see a lot of attention paid, I suspect, between now and Election Day. And likely in the days after Election Day, Desi Doyen.
Yes, yes, we should be fully prepared for this not to be over on November 5th.
Attention will be paid by both the Harris and Trump teams, I suspect, as voters in the state are thought likely to be the ones that may ultimately determine who will be the next president of the United States. No pressure, Pennsylvania. We will speak with the elections chief of what was once a very Democratic rural county in the state, but now a much more Republican one in recent years. Down in the southwest corner of the state, nearish Pittsburgh, but on the state border with both Maryland and West Virginia. I lived in Pennsylvania for a number of years, had no idea that the southern part of the state was on the border of Maryland. Who knew?
Well, it's a lovely state.
She also happens to be a longtime election integrity advocate before she became an election official. So I really look forward to asking her about all of the many challenges that both she and voters in her county and in her state, and frankly, with it in this country, are about to face over the next 7 weeks or so between now and Election Day, and, of course, in the days after as votes are tallied up.
Wish us all luck.
Speaking of which, I spent some time last week noting that the Cheneys, both Liz and Dick, have taken the extraordinary step of endorsing the Democratic candidate for president this year. But they are not by any means the only old school Republicans regarding Donald Trump as a threat to this nation and to its Constitution. Hundreds of Republican staffers now for Republicans like Mitt Romney, John McCain, George W. Bush, and just 2 days ago, even staffers for Ronald Reagan have now come out publicly to endorse the Harris-Walz ticket this year. And what do you know? Longtime hard-right Republican columnist George Will. George Will!
Wow.
endorsed Kamala Harris late last week. What world am I living in at this point? But you know what? Good for him. He's doing the right thing for democracy. And I should note, even a broken clock is right once in a lifetime. So congratulations, Mr. Will, though I should note that his endorsement was clearly reluctant, at times obnoxious, and included a call for a Republican majority in the Senate in order to return to what he describes as, quote, restoration of normal politics. And that would either be a good or bad thing, depending on where you may sit at this particular moment.
And how you define normal politics, like, you know, preventing a Supreme Court justice from being seated, stuff like that.
But it is not all dead-ender Republicans here who are finally seeing the light in their support of Harris. So are some respectable Americans, including Scientific Americans. See what I did there? Specifically, the editors of Scientific American magazine, who announced for only the second time in their 179-year history on Monday, they have now endorsed a candidate for president. As the editors wrote yesterday, quote, in the November election, the U.S. faces two futures. In one, the new president offers the country better prospects, relying on science, solid evidence, and the willingness to learn from experience. She pushes policies that boost good jobs nationwide by embracing technology and clean energy. She supports education, public health, and reproductive rights. She treats the climate crisis as the emergency it is and seeks to mitigate its catastrophic storms, fires, and droughts. I think Scientific American may be giving away the lead here in their first paragraph. In the other future, the new president endangers public health and safety and rejects evidence, preferring instead nonsensical conspiracy fantasies. He ignores the climate crisis in favor of more pollution. He requires that federal officials show personal loyalty to him rather than upholding U.S. laws. He fills positions in federal science and other agencies with unqualified ideologues. He goads people into hate and division, and he inspires extremists at state and local levels to pass laws that disrupt education and make it harder to earn a living. Only one of these futures will improve the fate of this country and the world, they write. That is why, for only the second time in our magazine's 179-year history, the editors of Scientific American are endorsing a candidate for president. That person, they write, is Kamala Harris. Before making this endorsement, they note, we evaluated Harris's record as a U.S. senator and as a vice president under Joe Biden, as well as policy proposals she's made as a presidential candidate. Her opponent, Donald Trump, who was president from 2017 to 2021, also has a record, a disastrous one. Let's compare. And then they go on to break down each of the candidates' positions and previous behavior regarding health care, reproductive rights, gun safety, environment and climate, and technology. Before concluding, at the top of the ballot, Harris does deserve our vote. She offers us a way forward lit by rationality and respect for all. Trump, a convicted felon who was also found liable of sexual abuse in a civil trial, offers a return to his dark fantasies and demagoguery, whether it's denying the reality of climate change or the election results of 2020 that were confirmed by more than 60 court cases, including some that were overseen by judges whom he appointed. One of two futures will materialize according to our choices in this election. Only one is a vote for reality and integrity. We urge you to vote for Kamala Harris. That is the editors of Scientific American making their only their second presidential endorsement in their 179-year history.
And they say vote for reality.
And who was their previous, the only other, their first endorsement for president?
I'm going to say Joe Biden.
That would be Joe Biden just 4 years ago. Anyway, more on some related topics in Desi Doyen's Green News Report coming up a little bit later this hour. But very quickly, before I get to my guest today, is it just me or does National Voter Registration Day seem to come earlier and earlier every year?
Hey, listen, you can register to vote any day, and you should if you haven't registered to vote yet.
Nonetheless, it is National Voter Registration Day today, which is really just a nice reminder to everyone that, yeah, if you haven't registered or if you have moved since last time you voted, or if you simply have not checked your voter registration lately to make sure that it is correct, up to date, and that you are still on the rolls, because a lot of folks have been purged in recent years from those rolls. Well, today is a great day to do exactly that. I did it again myself today at both lavote.gov, since I'm registered here in Los Angeles, and at the Secretary of State's website in here in California, just to be extra sure. So I checked at both sites and to see how their slightly different systems work at each. And you know, Des, did you check your voter
registration? I have not checked lately.
I guess nobody has been telling you that you should check lately on the air, sitting across the table from you, telling you to get busy and check that voter registration.
Now, do it.
Desi has a bit of an excuse in that California actually allows Election Day registration. So if, you know, she goes to vote, finds out she's not registered, she can go ahead and register right there. It does make things a little bit more complicated, but we'll use that for Desi's excuse today. Also, California is just one of almost half now of U.S. states and D.C. who allow you same-day registration. But other states require registration before Election Day, some of them way before Election Day, with deadlines for registration now arriving as early as October 6th in a whole bunch of those states. That's just a couple of weeks from now, so now's your chance if you live in one of those states. And if you don't know if you live in one of those states, go find out. Our friends at voteriders.org posted a helpful graphic to social media today that Desi did retweet, and I caught and retweeted myself, I think, with a National Voter Registration Day checklist, which seems quite helpful. They say to register to vote or check your status. Make sure you're registered to vote at your current address in your current state, whether it's your first or 50th time voting. Don't wait until tomorrow. Double check your state's voter ID law. They note 38 states now have photo ID restriction laws. 18 have added new laws since 2020. So if you don't think you have one in your state, you may be wrong. That may have changed. Some, they note, are annoyingly strict and confusing. So check to make sure that you have the right ID to vote. They say make a plan to vote now. You can vote early, in person, or depending on your state, by mail. Make your choice, then tell three people to do the same. They point folks to voteriders.org/vote. where you can get more information and get registered, or you can take Taylor Swift's advice. And I understand Donald Trump loves Taylor Swift. Have you heard? By going to vote.gov, you can do it there as well to register or to vote or to get help checking your registration. Registering to vote, they note, is just the first step. Every voter across the country also needs to make sure that they have the ID that they need, if any, to make their ballot count. They advise this National Voter Registration Day to do an ID check at voteriders.org/check and then spread the word. Vote Riders, like you're writing, voteriders.org/check to find out what ID you need in your particular state to vote this year.
And spread the word.
And with that, thoughts on who to vote for, how to make sure you're able to vote this year. Let's take a quick break, and we will come back with one of the many folks, I should say, heroic folks around the nation who are facing more pressure than ever this year as they are entrusted with the job of making sure that you can vote for whoever you want to vote for this year and that your votes are counted accurately as cast. Mary Beth Kuznick, formerly of the nonpartisan election integrity group Vote PA, now the chief election official in Fayette County, Pennsylvania, joins us next on the broadcast to discuss the, just a few challenges ahead in the coming weeks in the state that could decide this year's presidential election. That's straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman, and you're listening to the broadcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Well, we'll let that be your wake-up call. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. In recent weeks, when we've taken the time to focus on the horse race for the upcoming November 5th presidential election, as opposed to the track conditions that the horses are running on, which is always our central focus, I've noted that the Democratic Harris-Walz campaign has been generally leading the Republican Trump-Vance ticket, according to the major polling averaging sites, by anywhere from 1 to 3 points nationally in general. Now, there have been, over the past day or two, some new national surveys following the debate last week, finding Harris with a larger lead over Donald Trump, one showing her 6 points up over the former president, and another today giving her a 7-point lead. But again, that's nationally, and there will need to be more polls like that over time in order to bump up the polling averages that are collected by sites like 538, etc. But the current numbers are still well within the general margin of error for pre-election polling. And of course, we do not run national elections in this country. We run state by state contests. To that end, I've also noted that the so-called blue wall states for Democrats are Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And if they are able to win those three states and carry all of the other states that Democrats traditionally win, including Nebraska's second congressional district in the state which divides its electoral college votes by congressional district, well, Kamala Harris will become the next president of the United States, no matter if Republicans end up flipping back some of the battleground states like Georgia and Arizona that went to the Democrats back in 2020. So for many Democrats, all eyes are on those blue wall states again this year of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And in those states, the Harris-Walz ticket is also generally ahead in the pre-election polling averages from anywhere from 1 to 3 points in general. That is still a polling error away from flipping to Donald Trump, as all three of the blue wall states did back in 2016. Among those three states right now, Pennsylvania is pretty much by far the closest of the three if you believe the pre-election polling. And it is being considered this year as the main tipping point state for Democrats. In short, while Democratic eyes will be on Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, all eyes will be on Pennsylvania. And of course, there is much more happening in Pennsylvania this year, as in all 50 states, than just the presidential race. We've discussed on this program as well the concerns from many voting rights advocates and election integrity watchers about schemes to prevent the certification of results in some counties and some states, with Rolling Stone back in July reporting that they had identified what they described as, quote, nearly 70 pro-Trump election conspiracists currently working as county election officials in battleground states who have questioned the validity of elections or delayed or refused to certify results. At least 20 of these county election officials, they report, have refused or delayed certification in recent years. That, The outlet, and many others have noted, might be seen as, well, possible test runs for potential plans by Republicans this year if Donald Trump loses, to hold up certification, or to at least cause enough chaos to put the Electoral College count in doubt, to allow for challenges in courts and, of course, in Congress on January 6th next year, during the joint session of Congress constitutionally mandated for certification of the final results. And then there are the concerns we've also recently covered about the U.S. Postal Service, with Kansas's Republican Secretary of State last week sending a letter, followed the next day by the bipartisan officials at the National Association of Secretaries of State and the National Association of State Election Directors, sending a joint letter to the Trump-appointed Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, expressing grave concerns about delays and other failures in the way that the USPS has handled vote-by-mail absentee ballots, and the reported delays that have occurred with ballots both reaching voters and being returned to county election officials on time and with proper postmarks during the primary election season. A lot of worry from a lot of election officials from all parties. That is especially worrying with the huge growth in the popularity of absentee voting that occurred during and following the worst of the pandemic back in 2020. A lot of people like voting that way right now. Election seasons, particularly presidential election seasons, are always a fraught time for election officials who are asked to carry out an Herculean task with not nearly enough resources, and they are asked to do it, well, perfectly each and every time. There will be tremendous pressure once again this year on those election officials in every state as we come to what many justifiably regard as perhaps the most critical election in the nation's history. And nowhere is that pressure likely to be more intense this year than in the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Yes, that tipping point state that may determine this year's presidential election. So how's it going on the ground for election officials there so far this year? And are they ready for whatever may be coming? Let's find out. We're joined today by our longtime friend and longtime election integrity champion turned election official, Mary Beth Kuznick, the founder and executive director of Vote PA, fighting for many years for verifiable voting and other voting rights issues in Pennsylvania. She is now, well, doing much of that same work, but as the director of elections in Fayette County, Pennsylvania, in the southwestern part of the state, not too far from Pittsburgh, on the state border with both Maryland and West Virginia, in a county that had for decades voted solidly for Democrats in presidential elections, but now leans strongly Republican, with more than twice as many voting for Donald Trump back in 2020 than for Joe Biden in the county. So it's Mary Beth's job to make sure that all of those voters get to vote this year and have their votes counted as cast in one of the most important states in the nation this year, in one of the most important elections that we have ever had. No pressure. Mary Beth Kuznick, it has been too long, but welcome back to the broadcast.
Hello, my friend. Thanks for having me on.
Delightful to have you as always, Mary Beth. Hope you're holding up well. Now, listen, as I'm reading that introduction, I know that the jobs themselves are very different, being an election official versus an election integrity advocate, as you were for so many years at Vote PA. But it occurs to me that in many ways, the fight is for, or at least should be for, the exact same thing. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. I view this work that I'm doing now as an extension of everything else I've ever done. We, as election officials, as well as election advocates, want or should want the same thing, which is to make sure every vote is counted accurately as cast. And that is without regard to party or candidate or whatever. You vote and we count it the way you voted it.
So as I understand it, under Pennsylvania law, Mary Beth, absentee vote-by-mail ballots were actually allowed to start going out as of Monday this week, but that has not happened yet there. Why has that not happened?
Well, technically, the law that authorized no excuse mail-in voting, mm-hmm. which is known as Act 77 of 2019, mm-hmm. is very, it was written in haste in the 2019 legislative season, mm-hmm. and it's not terribly well written. So mm-hmm. there are a lot of ambiguities in it. And the part about the section that authorizes election offices to start processing mail-in and absentee applications says that we may do it 50 days out. Mm-hmm. However, we may also do it before that if we feel that it's helpful. It doesn't say anything whatsoever about when we should, the earliest we should be mailing those ballots out. It does say that we have to start mailing them out. I believe it's 2 weeks before the election, which is crazy way too close to the election to be sending mail-in ballots
right.
out. So it's a law that we've dealt with. It went into effect with the election of 2020, mm-hmm. and it's been having just massive effects.
And I would say affects both good and bad. I know that there had been complaints by a lot of Republicans after the 2020 election. Oh, they changed the laws in Pennsylvania. Well, I just want to underscore here. It was actually a Republican legislature that did so in 2019 before the pandemic. And that was signed by the Democratic governor. So it was sort of a bipartisan effort for a long overdue reform of the voting laws in Pennsylvania. They may or may not have gotten it all right, but you still have so ballots have not yet gone out, but you still have they even been programmed or printed yet at this point, Mary Beth?
Yes and no. So the state was held up statewide, mm-hmm. by four cases. They're minor party candidates who had some issues with their applications to get on the ballot statewide, mm-hmm. and they ended up in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which they've taken steps to expedite election cases. They've always election cases have been what we call the rocket docket, mm-hmm. but now it's like the, I don't know, the supersonic, you know, warp 9 rocket docket, because they know they have to start moving these quicker. So right. they finally, yesterday afternoon, late in the afternoon, the last case was decided, and the Department of State, the Secretary of the Commonwealth, issued a certified list of candidates. So now all 67 counties can go forward with finalizing their ballots.
And how long will that process take? Because you got to finalize it. Is not just determining who's on it, but you have to program your tabulators and so forth to read those ballots. How long does that take before you can actually begin sending them out?
Well, most of the counties, including the Fayette, where I'm director, we have been working to get the ballot as far along as we could without mm-hmm. the court's final decision. Mm-hmm. So, for example, today, the person that's working with us, we actually have something that looks like a ballot, and we're proofing it, and hopefully we'll go into the final testing of just mm-hmm. the ballot part, and then we can move forward with getting the stuff ready for logic and accuracy testing, which is coming up soon. So we're cutting it down on the wire.
Yeah.
We're getting it done.
Do we blame Bobby Kennedy for this? Was he one of those four candidates that they had to adjudicate whether he'd be on the ballot or not? And is he on the ballot in Pennsylvania this year?
He is not. He requested to be removed, and he was removed. It was actually two cases based on one candidate and then two other candidates. And they were from, I would say, both sides of the aisle, mm-hmm. but very, and I'm all for ballot access. I mean, mm-hmm. But when a state has convoluted rules like Pennsylvania, people that want to get on the ballot just have to figure it out and follow them. And if you don't, unfortunately, if the law is, you're going to get knocked off. So,
Yeah, I know that Pennsylvania has always been a very aggressive state. All the parties sort of challenging each other, challenging all the candidates. You know,
it's the blood sport of Pennsylvania yeah, politics.
Yeah, it is. Now, I mentioned with the slight delay there in being able to go to program and testing and then printing and sending it out, I mentioned the very serious concerns last week expressed by an unusual joint open letter, a bipartisan letter from election officials to the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, about delays and the lack of postmark on some ballots sent back to election officials. Do you have concerns about that? Did you sign on to that letter, by the way?
I did not. I actually did not have the opportunity to do so. But in Pennsylvania, each county is assigned to a region with a regional person mm-hmm. in charge of helping expedite postal issues is the best way I can put it. Mm-hmm. Basically like a customer service person. And they have been very helpful at the Postal Service. Now, that said, we have had some strange deliveries of ballots. In fact, in late July or early August, we got a small, but every ballot's precious and important. We got a small number of ballots back from that had been postmarked in April, and they finally got delivered in August.
Really?
It was like two or three, but that's two or three people's precious vote. Somebody died for the right for those people to vote. So I did report that, and our person's looking into that. You know, they do have some ability to see the routes and the pathways that mail takes through the system, and they're going to try to see what happened.
Wow.
Hopefully we figure it out, because I don't want it happening in this election.
Yeah, no, and it's also troubling, not just because they're precious, but because, you know, you have much lower turnout, obviously, in primary elections than you do in general elections. That two or three ballots from an early primary, you know, could be a lot more ballots in a general election. That's disturbing. Now, back in 2020, Mary Beth, one of the few election challenges that Donald Trump actually won yet that year, I think it was the only one that he didn't lose out of like 64 contests. If I recall, it was a challenge to the counting of late arriving ballots, ballots sent before Election Day, but not arriving until after. Am I remembering that correctly?
I believe so. Much water has flown under the bridge
okay.
since that happened.
Well, what is the deadline now for vote-by-mail ballots to arrive back at the county in order to be counted as cast? Do they have to get there before Election Day, be postmarked before Election Day? How does that work in Pennsylvania?
It's very simple. For non-military, non-overseas voters, it is 8 p.m. on election night. You must have it in your county election bureau or your county election office by 8 p.m. And that means in the office. That doesn't mean postmarked. Everything I write, I put postmarks do not count. Now, military voters get an extension of time if they have their ballot postmarked at least one day before the election. So it would be November 4th. They can arrive up to a week later, and we still count them.
If someone has a vote-by-mail ballot, and let's say it's a few days before the election in Pennsylvania, is the best thing at that point to drive it? Can you drop the ballot off at the precinct or at the election headquarters?
Absolutely. We strongly encourage any voter to do that. Now, some counties, particularly the larger counties, have satellite election offices or drop boxes. In some cases, in the smaller counties, the county here, Fayette, is a relatively small county, so we really can't staff multiple offices and drop places. So we urge people to come to our election bureau, and we will accept their ballot up to 8 p.m. on election night.
As I recall, when you and I spoke, I think it was before the 2020 election, Mary Beth, Pennsylvania had a very strange restriction on counting early, you know, vote-by-mail ballots before Election Day. Am I remembering that correctly, that you guys were not allowed to even start opening ballots and validating signatures and so forth until Election Day itself?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That is still in effect, and that is one of the flaws of Act 77. It gave us no excuse vote-by-mail, which can be a good thing, helps turnout. Mm-hmm. But the bad thing is that we can't touch those ballots. My office is in an old bank building. Mm-hmm. I actually have a vault, and our ballots are locked up when they arrive. They're locked up in a an actual vault. And so we can't take them out of the vault and start even checking the names off or opening them, and certainly not flattening them or putting them through a machine. It is possible. I guess the concern is that people think we'll get a total and it'll somehow get leaked. But the modern voting systems, you don't have to total it. You can actually scan those ballots and just let the machine sit on it until 8 p.m. and then you can hit the button and tabulate, and it will provide the total at that point. So it's kind of a false fear, but the ability to start pre-processing those ballots even a day or two earlier would help the results get out.
And it seems it would help the results, especially in recent elections where there have been complaints. Oh, it's taking too long. Oh, there's funny business going on. In fact, in a state like Pennsylvania, where you can't even begin to open the ballots, it's going to take some time to verify those results. There's also another problem that occurs to me, Mary Beth. Does that also mean that if there's, you know, errors on the ballot, someone forgets to sign it or puts the wrong date on the privacy envelope, that there's therefore no time to contact the voter before the election to cure that deficiency?
No, that's different. So the Pennsylvania's declaration envelope, the return envelope, has the signature and the date on the outside. Uh-huh. It's all been, there have been so many court cases about this, I can't keep track of them, but it boils down to those two things. And if one of those is missing, we can contact the voter. We have a mailing address for every voter, obviously, and we send them a letter. If that voter has provided a valid email or telephone, we also use those methods. Email is the best because the Department of State will also send them a notice that their ballot is deficient. And then they are, at least in this county, and all the counties are different, but in Fayette County, the voter can come into the office and show ID, and they may correct the problem on the outside of the envelope.
So that is something that, even though you can't open them and count them yet, that's something you can look at, see there's a problem here, and begin to contact the voters before Election Day.
Yes. Good. But if you have listeners that are hearing this from Pennsylvania, check with your individual county, because every county is handling this differently. There is no requirement in the law, so it's up to each individual election board to make their decision, and that's what mine has decided.
I gotcha. Now, I know that for many years, many voters at the polling place in Pennsylvania had to vote on 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems. We're moving from vote by mail here to polling on Election Day, or in person. That's changed now in much of the state, as I understand it. Voters in Fayette County now allowed to vote on verifiable hand-marked paper ballots?
Absolutely, or I wouldn't be working here.
I gotcha.
Much of the state is on hand-marked paper ballots. There are still a few that are using the ballot marking devices for all, which is, essentially they count using a barcode or a QR code. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a computer scientist, but many computer scientists and election advocates have, I'm sure you as well, have the concern that that barcode, that QR code, a human eye can't read it. So we don't know for sure that that says what the paper says. With the hand-marked paper, it's right there. We can easily see how each voter cast their ballot.
And for the record, I don't like computer ballot marking devices, touchscreens, whether they have the barcode or not, because we can't know if a voter has ever verified what the computer printed out. But when your county, and I don't know if you were there yet or not, was Fayette previously a touchscreen county that subsequently moved to a hand-marked paper?
No, actually, they had paper ballots after HAVA in the Help America Vote Act took effect in the first round of purchases under the Help America Vote Act, and which started the machines went into effect in most places in 2006, as you recall.
Right.
Fayette chose a system that used a direct recording electronic DRE for disability access, but they had the hand marked paper for everybody else.
Gotcha.
And I was first contacted. I was working with Vote PA, and one of the commissioners contacted me and wanted some information that I might have gotten. That's how I first met the folks in this county. Because they wanted they wanted to see what I knew or what I could offer in the way of information about why we should use a hand marked paper ballot.
Well, hopefully everyone understands that now. There are still too many places, like the entire state of Georgia, for instance, that forces voters to vote on those touchscreen machines at the polls on Election Day. But I'm happy to hear that at least most of Pennsylvania doesn't require that anymore. I mentioned, Mary Beth Kuznick, during my intro that there are concerns about the certification of results at both the state and county level. Maybe I should say the holding up of certification of results at the state and county level in some places as a way to sort of cause chaos and put the Electoral College count in doubt this year. Do you share those concerns either in your county, your own county, or in Pennsylvania overall?
Well, I don't think that county officials, election boards, want to hold up the election nationally. Are you sure? I can't speak for people, but I know in my own county, the election board, they're very conscientious. They want to follow the law. They want to do the right thing. And they also want to count every vote they legally can. So, in that respect, I'm glad I work with these folks, but in the state, what might become a problem is there are, for want of a better word, some of the now activist advocates are, I would say, using a wrong tactic. I mean, they're sort of weaponizing certain things, like they will challenge election results because they think they can, and demand recounts that, in case the law in Pennsylvania says to get a recount, you have to show either prima facie evidence of error or fraud, or you have to challenge each office in every precinct where it was running. So for, say, president, you'd have to challenge it in 9,000 some precincts in the state, which would be daunting.
Yes.
Or you have to show something to hang your hat on that there's a problem. I mean, if the machines appear to be operating correctly, the state's doing a risk-limiting audit. We also do a 2% audit. Many of those are hand-counted. If it doesn't look like there's a problem and people are still going into court and clamoring for these recounts, it will delay things. And it's just not a good thing to do. Don't do that, is what I would say.
Well, I would say that too. However, I'm concerned that we will see exactly that depending on the outcome of this election. Mary Beth, there's also sort of along similar lines, there's been very serious security concerns in a number of places for election officials, most notably in swing states like Georgia and Arizona, where there have been a lot of threats against election officials. Is that something that you have seen? Is that a concern for you and your staff and your poll workers in Fayette this year?
We're all mindful. I mean, we're always mindful. You know, we always should be mindful of security. And we've been very blessed here. This is a county that it's trending more to the red side or to the conservative side, but it's always in tradition been a conservative blue county. Mm-hmm. So really it's a purple county. And most of the people here share the idea that we're all Americans and we all have the right to vote. That said, we're still mindful of security. I mean, we have to be. I was very blessed. I worked in another county as director in 2020. Mm-hmm. And in that county and also here in Fayette, I have never, physically been accosted or threatened in any way. I've been called out on the radio a couple times by some would-be activists who I believe were misled.
I said I was sorry, Mary Beth. Why
no,
you...
it wasn't
oh.
you.
Oh, okay.
No. but that's, you know, that's fine. I mean, that's part of.
So you haven't received any of those threats, those letters that we've heard a lot of election officials getting, at least not yet?
Not yet. No, okay. I hope never.
Me too.
We're mindful, but thank goodness right now, people are letting us do our job, which is a good thing.
Last question before I let you go, Mary Beth Kuznick, your greatest concern right now, about 50 days or so out from Election Day. What's your greatest concern as voters are about to start voting in Fayette? Are you guys going to be ready come what may?
Yes, we are. We are actually, I made a nice, calendar, and we are right on schedule, and everything is moving along now. That said, listeners, if you don't make false claims about election integrity. If it's something that's real, obviously, of course, I want to get to the bottom. You know, we all do. All officials do, and those of us who have been working in this field. I mean, you, Brad, you know, everybody since the early 2000s. But if it's something that's not really real, don't bring it up. And the other thing, please, people, do not do right to know requests at this time unless it's absolutely essential. We've been getting all the counties in Pennsylvania have been getting what I would call weaponized right to know requests, big requests for big, huge, voluminous amounts of information.
Public records. Public records requests, as they're called in many places, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And if FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, is a federal level, but in Pennsylvania, it's called a right to know or public records request. And we want to fulfill them. But if you ask for, 10,000 pieces of paper 49 days before the election, that's going to be a problem. So again, if you don't need it now, let your local election bureau do their job. This is our time that we need to work.
Mary Beth Kuznick, Director of Elections in Fayette County, Pennsylvania. Gee, why won't you leave those election integrity people alone, Mary Beth? You're so hard on them. Anyway, she was a longtime election integrity champion at Vote PA, where she was the founder and executive director before moving on to become an election official. Now, I think we're in her third state in the last few years in Fayette County. Always great speaking with you, Mary Beth. Good luck this year. I know you're going to need it. And in one sense, I hope we don't have to call you between now and Election Day or in the days immediately after, unless it's good news.
Well, I hope so. But anytime, Brad, I'm always glad to talk to you and to the folks on your listeners.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary Beth. All right. We got to get to a quick break. Come back with Desi Doyen. I should note, by the way, one of the reasons I raised that issue of when Pennsylvania starts counting their absentee ballots and the fact that they can't even look at it, can't even verify them and open them and flatten them and prepare them to be counted until Election Day. One of the reasons I mentioned that is because this is a big thing that the Trumpers brought up in 2020, the so-called red mirage, where it looks like Election Day ballots in a state like Pennsylvania might be coming in favor of the Republican candidate. And then when everyone goes to sleep, they add in the early vote by mail ballots since they can't count them until so much later. And the vote by mail ballots tend to be, and from what I hear this year in Pennsylvania, again, coming in much more so from Democrats than from Republicans. That doesn't necessarily tell us how they're going to vote, but if you got a lot more Democrats voting by absentee vote by mail and those can't be counted until much later than the Election Day ballots, well, you could see in a state like Pennsylvania, looks like Donald Trump has a lead going to sleep at night, and then they get around finally to adding in the absentee ballots and things change and suddenly it's a blue victory.
Make sure that people you know understand how these kinds of things
the
work.
The red mirage, as they call it. All right, let's take a quick break, and we are back with Desi Doyen and our latest Green News Report right here on the Bradcast. I am Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. All right, Desi, I don't know if it's just me, but I kind of took some of the comments, some of the remarks that Donald Trump made when he was out here in Los Angeles a few days ago.
Yep.
I kind of took some of them personally.
Yes.
I think maybe for good reason, maybe not. I don't know. You'll decide in our latest Green News Report.
A tornado of smoke, a children's playground burning. The radiating heat enough to set the closest homes ablaze.
Natural gas pipeline explodes in suburban Houston. Unprecedented deadly storms and floods ravage Central Europe, West Africa, and North Carolina. Plus,
we won't give him money to put out all his fires.
Trump threatens to withhold disaster aid from California.
All of those threats and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Gavin Newsom is going to sign those papers. And if he doesn't sign those papers, we won't give him money to put out all his fires.
Yeah, let California burn. You're running for president, you jackass, not Mafia Don. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, well, I hate to say it, but Houston, we have a problem.
Yes, in Texas on Monday, a pipeline carrying liquefied natural gas exploded next to a playground in the Houston suburb of Deer Park, seriously damaging nearby homes and knocking out power to thousands. No injuries reported, but homes, stores, schools, and a college were evacuated as first responders worked to limit the fire spread. No word yet on the cause. Pipeline owner Energy Transfer said it shut off the gas flow, but the remaining fuel in the pipeline will have to burn itself out. It's one of more than a dozen pipelines underlying the area. The blast underscores recurring questions about the adequacy of the pipeline industry's efforts to protect the public.
Yeah, that's got to be terrifying, knowing that one of these pipelines blew up and there's like a dozen more under their feet.
Yep. In other news, Europe is staggering under the latest flood of the century. Over the weekend, deadly historic storm Boris parked over Central Europe, triggering record cold, record snow, and heavy rains. Some areas got 6 months' worth of rain in just 4 days, with floods destroying infrastructure and inundating water and sewage treatment plants. For parts of the Austrian Alps, it was the first ever snowstorm on record in September. Forecasters say the unprecedented storm was fueled by, quote, record-breaking temperatures in the Mediterranean Sea, combined with extreme cold air spilling out of the Arctic, stalling the storm over Central Europe. Climate scientists link the increased frequency and intensity of stalled weather systems to man-made global warming driven by the burning of fossil fuels.
I saw a map of the jet stream today. It's just going crazy all around the globe.
That is also linked to global warming. And in fact, Sweden and Norway set a September heat record of 87 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm. Climate activists on social media noted the irony of the public's anger over protesters blocking roadways to demand climate action, yet are silent when unprecedented storms, floods, and fires fueled by climate change block and destroy roadways.
Yep.
In West and Central Africa, a humanitarian crisis is unfolding. Catastrophic flash flooding triggered by unusually heavy rains has left more than 1,000 people dead, 4 million displaced, and hundreds of thousands of homes destroyed, according to aid agencies. In Nigeria, residents had only minutes to flee the fast-rising waters. In North Carolina, a state of emergency was declared on Monday after a powerful storm spun up quickly in the overheated Atlantic Ocean, bringing heavy rain and life-threatening flooding in what forecasters are calling a one in 1,000-year rain event that dumped a foot and a half of rain in just 12 hours. Finally, in politics, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump, on a visit to California on Friday, threatened to withhold federal disaster aid to the state if he is reelected, unless Governor Gavin Newsom does Trump's bidding on issues like water and taxes. The threats came in response to a reporter's question about helping Americans struggling with natural disasters like the wildfires in California.
And Gavin Newsom is going to sign those papers. And if he doesn't sign those papers, we won't give him money to put out all his fires. And if we don't give him the money to put out his fires, he's got problems. He's a lousy governor.
Governor Newsom responded in a statement, quote, "Every voter should be made aware of this. Donald Trump just admitted he will block emergency disaster funds to settle political vendettas. Today, it's California's wildfires. Tomorrow, it could be hurricane funding for North Carolina or flooding assistance for homeowners in Pennsylvania. Donald Trump doesn't care about America. He only cares about himself."
That sounds right. Unbelievable. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. There you go. Donald Trump is making an offer we can't refuse here in California.
Or, of course, you know, people could just not vote for him, and so he wouldn't become president.
And then we get
and
to...
then he wouldn't extort disaster relief for any state that doesn't do his bidding and knuckle under and, you know, submit to whatever crazy ideas he has.
So it's an offer we can refuse.
Yes.
Excellent. I look forward to it.
Register to vote and then vote and help others vote.
Well done. Bringing it around full circle is our producer, Desi Doyen. My thanks to her and to my guest today, Mary Beth Kuznick of Fayette County, Pennsylvania these days. And of course, my thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always greatly appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you want to hear it again, share it with someone you know, love, or hate, you can do so for free at bradblog.com. All we ask is that you consider hitting one of those donate buttons while you're there to help us stay on your public airwaves, at least through the end of this election. There's an offer you can't refuse. A donation of any amount you can afford, or better yet, a monthly automated donation of any amount you might like or be able to afford. You can get there at bradblog.com/donate. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter, I am the Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.